Good morning. On the telephone with me, I have Diane DiRigo, and she is from NIRS, the Nuclear Information and Resource Service. Welcome, Diane.
Thank you. Hi, welcome.
I was really glad to be able to get you on the air because I hear that there's a pressing matter that we all should know about. Could you tell us about what's happening?
Yes. The U.S. Department of Energy is the agency that makes the nuclear weapons in the United States, and over the decades they have contaminated big areas at their weapons complex around the country.
Mm-hmm.
And what they want to do now is in their process of quote-unquote cleaning up these sites,
mm-hmm.
they want to take the radioactive metal and sell it into commercial recycling, so it would then be incorporated into everyday household items like the zipper on your pants, the ring on your finger, your earrings, your baby toys, or silverware, anything made of metal, the chair you're sitting on, cars, building materials, could be contaminated with radioactive waste if this with nuclear bomb waste, actually, if the Department of Energy gets its way. And this is not the first time that the nuclear industry and nuclear weapons complex have tried to foist their nuclear waste onto the public. It's been going on, and there was so much opposition in the year 2000 that then the head of the Department of Energy put two bans on the release of radioactive metal from radioactive areas. However, the plan right now for the Department of Energy is to reverse the ban, to lift it and allow the metal that has accumulated during all this cleanup out into, they want to sell it into everyday recycling.
And so if the metal gets put into these recycling centers and then gets melted down, that does not mitigate the radiation?
No. Radioactivity is not destroyed by incinerating or melting or heat. There's nothing that we know of right now that can destroy the radioactivity that comes out of different radionuclides. They can change their form. Like you could have radioactive elements that are in a solid form, and then if you incinerate, it could get turned into a gas and go out into the air, and it would be a radioactive carbon or a radioactive plutonium. And, you know, one that's in the air as opposed to being in a solid form, or it could get dissolved into liquid, but it's still radioactive for as long as it's going to be radioactive. And some of these elements continue to give off radioactivity for hundreds, thousands, literally millions of years. So once it's released into the marketplace and into the metal supply, it's going to be there. And it'll get recycled and recycled again. And a sad part of this, which is actually something I didn't know till I looked into it, that the steel industry internationally is the best recycler in the world. They do the most amount of recycling. So most of the steel that we use is recycled. And the promoters of this idea, the Department of Energy, claim that they will reduce the amount of mining for fresh metal if they let this out, because they'll be letting more metal out and there won't be as much need for mining. But actually what they're doing is the opposite. They would be contaminating the metal supply, poisoning it, so that there'd be a greater demand for fresh metal or virgin metal.
And then, so for people who think that the government agencies are here to protect us and they wouldn't let harmful things happen to us, what would be the reasoning from the DOE that they, the reasoning is that they're just claiming that this is going to reduce the need for new mining. That's their...
Well, they would prefer, okay, since the radioactive materials that are contaminating the metal, some of them are very long-lasting, it's basically going to be a waste that needs to be isolated for a long, long time. If they can rewrite their rules, which they've done, to provide what they're calling authorized limits to authorize release of this stuff, and then they've also devised a computer model that projects the doses that they claim we will get and that our children will get, and they're saying that these are acceptable, and thus can be released, and then they can sell it into recycling as opposed to paying to manage it or dispose of it. That's the problem with the nuclear, a big problem with the nuclear industry and the nuclear waste problem is that the waste is forever. It needs to be isolated, and we don't really have mechanisms to isolate from the environment. Everything gets out into the air and water eventually. So by dispersing it deliberately, selling it into the marketplace, they save money or make a little money on it, as opposed to having to try to do the impossible, try to isolate it forever.
Is the metal that's being used here depleted uranium?
This is not specifically depleted uranium. The metal that they're talking about right now is, uranium is a metal, and I'll talk about what depleted uranium is in a second, but the metal that is proposed right now, and by the way, people should comment to the nuclear to the Department of Energy by February 11th on this idea of recycling it. It is more the dismantling of buildings, components, parts, pipes that have been contaminated by being in contact with radioactive materials.
Mm.
And the depleted uranium, which is just as dangerous as regular uranium-235 from a health standpoint, it is a separate, not really a separate category, but it's not the target of the plan right now.
I see.
But I want to say about
this
that
is your most urgent campaign because the deadline is the 11th.
And yes, but I want to say that one of the places that generates a lot of the radioactive metal is the separation of uranium that's used in the nuclear reactors, the weapons and power reactors, from the other uranium, which they call depleted. It's only called depleted because the uranium-235 has been removed, but it's still uranium-234, 238. Other uraniums are called in this depleted uranium category, and then that material, it really also needs to be isolated from the environment, and irresponsibly, it's being dispersed into the environment through uranium weapons and then other consumer goods.
Where did all this radioactive metal originate from? You said it's in weapons, but was it intentionally put into the weapons, or was it something that was already contaminated and then they made it into a weapon?
Okay, so the depleted uranium is one, the uranium is what's mined from the ground. It is separated. It's put through special, it's converted from a solid into a gas, and then the gases are put through special enrichment facilities and separate out the uranium-235, and then that is used to make nuclear bombs and fuel for nuclear power. The uranium that's left over, is depleted uranium, as you've mentioned, and that's been stored at the Department of Energy weapons sites and sometimes sent into the marketplace or used to make bombs and shielding for bullets. So that uranium is, as I say, not the specific target of the current release plan. The plan right now is to take the buildings in which these activities took place. They dismantled those, and a lot of metal is in
okay.
them.
Oh, okay. I see.
There are also
you said
components
before.
And pipes, and yeah.
It didn't sink in the first time you said it. Sorry. Sometimes these things are such confusion that it takes a few times of hearing it to believe it.
Well,
absorb it.
Then it gets further complicated. Not that I want to put people to sleep or glaze the eyes over, but the Department of Energy has a separation between metal that has radioactivity on the surface, and then there's also regular metal, nickel, steel, iron, copper, brass, all of these metals that are in use, they weren't radioactive when they went into the complex, but they were used as part of the things that the nuclear weapons industry does to make nuclear weapons, and they got contaminated in the process. If the radioactivity is just on the surface, they call it surface contaminated metal, and that's the stuff that right now the Department of Energy wants to sell into the marketplace, into recycling, melt it down. They've got projected computer models that, yeah, the doses will be just fine. And then there's also some metal that had the surface contamination on it, but then they melted it down already and made it into ingots, these cylindrical things that are metal, just pure metal. But these are radioactive metal because the radioactivity on the surface got melted in.
Mm.
Now, this they call it volumetric contaminated metal, and there's going to be a future effort by DOE to let that stuff out. They've separated it into the surface contaminated and the stuff that's already been melted that they call volumetric, and you know, give us a few months or a year, and I'll be back on talking about the same thing regarding volumetric metal. This is just a foot in the door for releasing the, all of it.
I see.
And the bans that, that the Department of Energy Secretary put in place back in the year 2000 were on both of these. He did two separate bans, one on the surface metal, one on the volumetric metal. And the upshot is that this stuff was made as part of a nuclear campaign, a nuclear weapons production process. We have the same problem with the commercial nuclear power industry, but they're regulated differently, and Department of Energy isn't regulated. It's a self-promoting agency, and they've decided on their own that their offices within can determine quote-unquote authorized limits, so it sounds very official, but they're self-authorizing contamination levels that can go out into the marketplace, and there's not a safe level in the first place, so any amount that goes out increases people's risks.
It's basically industry regulating itself.
Yes, and these, it's actually the government in this case. The Department of Energy is a federal government agency, and National Nuclear Security Administration is a part of the Department of Energy. These complexes and their contractors are setting their own limits for what they can release, and they're setting it based on detection levels of instruments from way back in 1974. They haven't been able to get... We in the public have been successful over the last 20 or 30 years in stopping any efforts to release radioactive materials into the marketplace, pretty successful, except with the Department of Energy. The Department of Energy did put a ban on letting metals out, but they are releasing concrete, soil, asphalt, wood, paper, plastic. That stuff could be getting out right now, and it's real hard to measure.
Wow.
So these bans are in place for metal, and we're hoping that we can keep those in place. And we can, really. I think that the public has spoken out before. There's been a congressional letter written to the Department of Energy asking them tough questions and telling them not to proceed. We're requesting congressional hearings. Congress is definitely in the hands, in the pockets of the nuclear industry, so it's hard to get Congress to really do the kind of oversight that they need to, but the public really isn't going to stand for any additional risks. It's bad enough. Who of us doesn't have friends and family that have been stricken with cancer? And radioactivity causes it. Radioactivity causes heart disease. It causes reduced immunity. It makes our lives more difficult. We don't need additional stressors in our lives, and it's already out there in a way that the radioactivity is already present in the environment. That doesn't justify adding more to it.
Right. So I think just with this small amount of information, I've already been convinced, and people, I think, should be convinced to do something about it. Let's tell them how to get, how they can act to stop it, and then we'll talk about some more questions.
Well, the first thing to do would be to go to the Department of Energy's, to email the Department of Energy. You can do that directly, or you can do it through the Nuclear Information Resource Service website, which is www.nirs, I think you've announced it before, www.nirs.org, Nuclear Information Resource Service website, and we have on the front page there a picture of a zipper, and underneath you can click and get more a little more background on this, and then there's an opportunity to sign on to an existing comment and encourage people to put your own thoughts in and comment directly to the Department of Energy, and if we do it by the 11th of February, then it will be in the within the comment period.
And to sign the existing comment, you click You Can Help Stop Them, and then that brings up a place to put your name and address in?
Yes, that's right.
Great. The radiation that is in this metal, is that the alpha, beta, gamma?
It's everything.
Okay.
There's no limit on the different kinds of radioactive elements, radioisotopes that can be in or on the metal. And so we could have something like plutonium-239, which is going to be dangerous for a quarter to a half a million years, or we could have something that's very intense like cobalt-60, which is only dangerous for 100 years, or we could have strontium or cesium, which people have probably heard about when Fukushima started blowing up and dispersing waste around the planet in the air and into the food chain. That stuff is dangerous for 300 to 600 years, and it's also very biologically active. It gets into our bodies and is taken up. Strontium is seen like calcium, so it gets concentrated in the bone and in the teeth, and it can cause bone cancer, and it can cause leukemia because the bone, the long bones are where the blood cells are formed, and if you've got strontium in there instead of calcium, and it's giving off its beta particles. So each of these radioactive elements that can get out, it can get into the food chain, it can get into the, or you can have direct exposure if it's on your ring or on your earrings or any other metal that you're in close contact. And the different radionuclides give off alpha particles, beta particles, or gamma rays. And the gammas, of course, are more penetrating, and they're more easy to detect. But the other elements also do damage. So, I mean, the other types of radioactivity also do damage.
That's incredible. With strontium, sometimes you hear of people taking strontium supplements. That wouldn't be radioactive then? That would be a stable form of strontium?
I have not heard of that, and I'm certainly would hope that it's not radioactive strontium that people would take on purpose. I've never heard of that.
Okay. It's just some people were talking about using strontium for bone health, and I guess I'd have to assume that that's a different type of strontium.
Well, there are... I can go look it up, but I won't do it while we're on the air. I can get back to you on
sure.
it. Actually, I've got the chart of the nuclides here. I can look it up while we're talking to see if there are stable forms of strontium. But strontium is generally something that you would want to avoid.
Now, is the radioactivity have a cumulative toxicity so that the it builds up in your body? Or that the effects of it.
Yeah. The radioactivity concentrates, and the damage that's done stays there. It doesn't go away. So we've got it's multiple exposures can cause additional damage. Let's see, multiple. It's additive, so you can keep getting more and more exposure from the same, let's say you inhale or ingest a radioactive element, and it lets you ingest an iodine, radioactive iodine, and it goes to the thyroid. Now, there is not radioactive iodine. There are different isotopes. Some are radioactive and some are not, and the iodine that we normally eat is not radioactive, but there are radioactive forms of it. So if the radioactive iodine gets into the thyroid gland and concentrates there, it gives off radioactivity from within. It's like a little X-ray machine within the body. So that's the problem with inhaling or ingesting radionuclides.
Mm. And is there any way for people to get radiation out of their body once it gets into their tissues?
It's some of it flushes out over time. There's a biological half-life that is for many of these, but some doesn't flush out. And there have been, I know of a doctor that used to do chelation therapy to help people that worked at a weapons complex to get some of the chemicals and radioactivity out of their bodies, but it's not a routine procedure, and it's not an easy or pleasant or common procedure.
Do you know if there's much documentation of the illnesses of people who work in these facilities, or is that something that
I think that is something that is that's more and more being shown. Back in the very early days of the Atomic Energy Commission, Dr. John Kaufman was one of the first researchers to show that radiation was harmful. And when he was going to speak up about it, he was blackballed. He ended up being sidelined, taken off of the project that was looking at the health effects of radiation. Dr. Alice Stewart, Mancuso and Stewart, did studies of Hanford workers at one of the big weapons complexes, and their work showed that workers were suffering more from their health effects than those that weren't exposed to the radioactivity. More recently, Dr. Steve Wing in North Carolina has done studies of Oak Ridge workers and other weapons complex workers and showed that they have higher health effects. The Oak Ridge weapons complex in Tennessee, there was a whole series of stories about the workers there in the 1990s, and that's something that if people were going to research this, they should definitely pull up the stories of the health effects on the Oak Ridge workers. Mm. So this kind of this is something that the Department of Energy even admitted at one point and apologized, and there is a whole there's a law that's in place to compensate the workers of the nuclear weapons complex for their sacrifices, their health, and during the nuclear weapons production.
Has there been an effort to reach out to metal recyclers and warn them about this issue, or do you think that they already would be informed?
The American, the metal industry is using its own channels to try to prevent this. They have a zero tolerance policy. There's a Metal Industry Recycling Coalition. There's the American Iron and Steel Industry. There's the AISI. There's the Steel Manufacturers Association. And all of these have, for decades, been working to prevent the Department of Energy from allowing these releases. There were some hearings in 1999 and 2000, 2001, and those industries came out in force saying, no, we don't want this stuff in our supply. Because what's actually happening is, on one hand, you've got the nuclear establishment trying to get rid of their waste, and instead of trying to isolate it like they should, they're pretending it's okay to let out, releasing it out, and then the metal industry ends up getting it into their supply, and they're the ones that suffer both the health effects of managing it, of processing it, and then the taint. The people will deselect metal; they'll choose something else because they don't know that the nuclear industry is also releasing radioactive plastics and concrete and soil out too. I mean, really, it's something that we need the bans that the Department of Energy put in place on releasing metal to be expanded to stop sending it out into other concrete, soil, asphalt, chemicals, other places as well.
If it's not dispersed, where are the proper channels for containing it at this point? Isn't there only two states that do it?
Well, there are nuclear weapons sites and research labs around the country in many different states. New York has several, Brookhaven and Knowles in the eastern part of the state. And the Department of Energy has a role at the West Valley site south of Buffalo. So there are a lot of locations, and some of these locations where the weapons are produced have their own burial areas for nuclear materials.
Wow.
And it's not, there's no good way to fully isolate it. So the real question here is, okay, do you want it deliberately dispersed, you know, secretly exposed to it through the consumer goods that we contact daily, or should they make an effort to try to isolate it? And unfortunately, no disposal is perfect, but at least these waste sites are they're intended to be designed to isolate radioactivity. The problem is that you can't guarantee isolating things that are dangerous as long as these radioactive materials, so that's why we need to, in the beginning, stop making it. I mean, that's really the bottom line, is that we shouldn't be creating radioactive waste. But this stuff has been created, and since the bans were put in place in the year 2000, they've been stored at the weapons complex sites, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a plan B that if they can't get away with recycling it, they want to send it to regular garbage or hazardous waste sites. So it means then that you'd have radioactive materials going into solid waste dumps, you know, your municipal landfill, along with the other regular household garbage, and possibly going to incinerators, and then if there's any metal that gets recycled through, you know, recaptured through those places, the radioactive metal could get out that way into the marketplace.
Well, sounds like an awful problem, and as you said, that we need to stop it right at the root cause, which is mining for uranium at all and using it as a fuel or a weapon. And it seems like a problem that's also not just in this industry, but in chemical industries. There's a lot of byproducts that are toxic, and they get put into consumer markets for those products instead of just stopping the industries that are creating those types of wastes.
Yeah, I think more and more the whole idea of zero waste, of making things that are not built to be disposed, but that are built to be reused or go back into this stream of use. So we don't create things that are so toxic or radioactive that they're going to be harmful. But if we can find ways to create things that are intentionally reused, we've got a finite planet, and we can't just keep digging up more materials and then contaminating them and then trying to isolate them. We've got to try to take what we've got and do better planning from the beginning to the end.
I don't know how we're doing for time, but I was wondering if you'd like to speak about, give us a brief update on West Valley nuclear waste dump.
Yeah, I've got about 7-8 more minutes here. The West Valley nuclear, well, let me just say, on the metal recycling issue, I hope that all of your listeners will go to the NIRS website, www.nirs, and comment to the Department of Energy, and you can do it also directly. There's a second link that you can hit on that says talking points on our website, and that gives you some of the basic points we've been talking about today, and you can fashion your own comment if you'd like to do it that way and go directly to the DOE. So either way, whether it's through the NIRS link or whether it's through your own direct comment to the Department of Energy, I'm hoping people will really do that and spread the word. And okay, West Valley. The West Valley site is a nuclear waste dump south of Buffalo, New York, about 30 miles south. It is the only place in the United States where nuclear waste, nuclear power waste, was reprocessed. When they make nuclear power, and you've got three reactors up in Oswego, one north of Rochester in Ginay, called Ginay. There's three at Indian Point. One is permanently closed. The other two operate. So New York's got a bunch of nuclear reactors, and then Pennsylvania's got a bunch of them that aren't that far from New York, and Ohio to the west. The fuel in the core of the reactors, it is in the form of 10-foot-long pencil-thin rods filled with uranium, and when the reactor operates, the uranium splits. The heat from binding the uranium atoms is released, and it heats the water and turns the turbines and makes electricity. But then other radioactive elements form in those rods. So, and not all the uranium is used up. It gets clogged up with these new fission products, these strontium, cesiums, iodines that form from the splitting of the uranium, and they clog up the rods. So the brilliant idea, which was tried in 1966 to 1972, is to take those rods, send them to a site at West Valley. They chopped them up, they dissolved them in chemicals, and extracted the uranium and plutonium out of the rods, and then all the other elements that were left and the chemicals that they dissolved in resulted. Now, the uranium that was pulled out in the U.S. was not used for other nuclear power fuel. It went to the Department of Energy, and we don't really know what happened to it after that. The liquid and sludge that was left with this whole brew of radioactive and hazardous chemicals sat in the tanks for a number of years, and the Department of Energy was called in 1980 to try to convert it into a solid so it wouldn't leak out. The site itself is located in a valley. There's a bedrock valley underneath it. It's on glacial till that is expected to erode into the streams and the Great Lakes in 1,500 years or so. And so the radioactivity that I mentioned, it's longer lasting than the hundreds of years, that's hazardous into the thousands and millions of years, some of it would get into that water supply. And there's also radioactivity migrating already from the site. Anyway, the liquid and sludge was converted, the liquid was converted into a solid, and they've got 275 logs, intensely radioactive logs, sitting in a building at West Valley, and then they've got still sludge in the tanks. And they've got two burial grounds that have plutonium and other intensely radioactive materials. And these are unlined soil holes, or some of the holes are lined, but the trenches are not. At the time, they were allowed to bury in cardboard boxes and bags.
Wow.
And there has been much leakage from those burial areas. They were closed. The burial area was open until 1975, when water filled in the trenches and gushed through the trench caps into the lakes, into the streams toward the lake. And at that point, they closed the burial. This was a commercial so-called low-level waste burial site. It's owned by the state of New York. The whole site is contaminated. It's projected to cost $10 billion to clean up. The Department of Energy has been called in, as I said, to clean up the reprocessing part. And let's see, I guess the effort really, the thing that we need to do right now is to demand that New York do a full cleanup and that the Department of Energy do a full cleanup of this site. Otherwise, we have the danger of this stuff leaking into the Great Lakes. And with nuclear waste, it's true. There's no really great place to put it. But we can't leave it in an area where we know it's going to leak out. At this point, the Department of Energy and the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority are doing studies on how fast they think it's going to leak or if it's going to leak. They've not even included climate change in their projections, and so there's a lot of pressure for them to reassess. But they really should be figuring out how to excavate the site and store the waste, isolate it, rather than fighting over how fast it's going to leak or not leak and trying to determine if they can try to block all the leaks as they detect them underground when they're not even really detecting that much. The plan in the next couple of years there is to demolish the building that's holding the high-level waste and put the high-level waste in metal casks out on the road, on a pad near the road indefinitely. And this is high-level waste, and there's no high-level repository, and so it's indefinitely going to be sitting there. It's good that it's not in the liquid form, that it's now in a solid form, but it's still giving off very high levels of radioactivity into the area, and I'm concerned about during the demolition of the building whether radioactivity will spread across New York.
Wow, that's completely alarming. I had no idea about that issue. Thank you for telling us about it. And, you know, it's sometimes people don't want to hear bad news, but that's the first step to taking care of the problems.
There is a westvalleyaction.org website, so if people want to check out a little more on that, go for it.
Okay, well, it was wonderful having you on, and I'm going to have your co-worker, Mary Olson, come on in March, and she'll be telling us some more about these issues.
Yeah, she's got a study that she put, well, a paper that she did on radiation being more harmful to women. The National Academy of Sciences does every 10 or so years an update on radiation health effects. And the National Academy is a pro-nuclear body to begin with. So they came out in their last report with conclusions that, once again, that there's no safe level of ionizing radiation. But what they didn't say in their conclusions, but what Mary found in the charts, is that when they looked at the people who get exposed to radiation, that 50% more women get cancer and die from cancer than men at the same doses. So she'll be on and talk to you about that, and it makes a lot of difference in when we pick allowable contamination.
Yes. Well, Diane DiRigo, thank you so much for speaking with us this morning, and I'll encourage all the listeners to go to NIRS.org and comment on that issue today. The deadline's February 11th.
Thank you much. Bye.